Well, why is conservation more important now than it ever has been for all dimensions of sustainability? Let's ask Shane Mahoney, internationally renowned conservationist and founder, president, and CEO of Conservation Visions. Mr. Mahoney is the featured speaker for the Boone and Crockett Lecture Series at Michigan State University. His speech is Conservation Matters, the Secrets of Leadership. Shane, a real pleasure to meet you.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Shane, let's start, before we get into the speech and some of the take-home messages, a little bit about Conservation Visions, your mission. What are you trying to do?
Well, Conservation Visions was born out of, obviously, a fairly long career of working on conservation and research issues, largely in North America. But I, along that pathway, I had the opportunity to become engaged in, with a lot of international organizations that were also dealing with conservation issues around the world, places like Africa, for example. And one of the salient truths that kept emerging and confronting me in my efforts to do as much as I could for wildlife was that we are a community of interest, but we are very disjunct. And while a lot of organizations are doing very good things individually for the conservation of wildlife and the benefits of humanity, there is this inevitable competition, if you will, or channeling of effort. And one of my objectives is to try to find ways to bring those entities together, to build coalitions, to set aside differences and work on those things we agree upon. Because the natural world is not waiting for us to get our act together. It's changing as we speak, and not in a good way. And so I left the institute that I had founded, and I founded Conservation Visions. And right now we have a series of programs that link us with the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, sort of as a global effort. I serve as vice chair for sustainable use for that organization globally. And then I work in Europe with the International Council for the Conservation of Wildlife as deputy president for policy and law. And then I have a great network of partners and organizations here in North America. And it's all my effort, as much as one individual can, to try to get people, as I said, to keep wildlife first, not their organizations, not their personal philosophies, but to put wildlife first and to get us to work together in that regard. And that really is the primary goal and mission of the organization I founded.
You've got a compelling slogan that I picked up in reading some background materials. You call it, and you've alluded to this, one natural world, one humanity, one chance. Conservation matters. Elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, first of all, of course, I guess it is we have come to understand that the globe really is a contained entity. The amazing advances in space travel and so on have given us the incredible photos of this one blue orb spinning, you know, on its axis. We no longer have to doubt whether the world is flat or round. We know we've settled that debate. So we know that we have this, you know, this one globe. And when we look at humanity today and we see the amount of interchange between races and cultures and so on as the world becomes globalized, we really do come to understand the depth of sharing in terms of values and principles that good people have everywhere. And so it is very clear as one looks at this globe and looks as one walks through an airport and sees all the different nationalities and races of people moving about the world that we really are in this together because there is nowhere else for us to go. And so that's the idea of one humanity. And, of course, one chance, well, you know, we now are rising to the 8 billion mark in terms of our numbers. We will go to 9. And many believe that we will actually reach this extraordinary number of 10. And if you can imagine, you know, what just here in a country as wealthy, you know, with as much, which is healthy an environment as you have and as much opportunity as this country has and as few people as it has relative to the land base, if you can imagine even the kinds of pressures that are going to come to this country if we reach the 9 and 10 billion people, I think we can all have some vague idea at least of just the pressures that are going to come on other parts of the world where human populations are already extremely dense. And wherever human populations are extremely dense, and particularly where institutions don't work as well as they might, we see a major taking of wildlife and an engagements with wildlife, either through the taking of land or the taking of wildlife itself, that is leading to massive depletions. And so I really think for many, many species, we have lost the one chance. And for many other species, we really are dealing with our last chance. And some of those species are iconic species, like rhinos and lions and species, you know. I think the time has come now for us to do the right thing for wildlife, because by the time we get to 9 and 10 billion human beings, if we're not doing it right, then the implications are severe.
I'm talking with internationally renowned conservationist and president of Conservation Vision, Shane Mahoney. Shane, let's talk specifically about a new initiative, I mean, that really puts in more tangible terms some of the things that we've just been talking about. It's a very ambitious vision. It's a very ambitious initiative. It's called the Wild Harvest Initiative. Tell us about that.
This idea was born out of a couple of different lines of thinking. Number one, in many parts of the world today, the taking of wildlife for personal consumption, the so-called bushmeat trade or activity, is viewed as a very significant problem in terms of the loss of natural diversity. And it's a very simple equation. There are many people who are without food and other food sources, and therefore they naturally harvest wild food and wild resources. But they are doing it at a scale where obviously it is depleting wildlife tremendously, and it's surfaced as one of the real great threats to the diversity of life on the planet. It's a complicated issue because it involves humans, human livelihoods, human cultures, people, real children, you know, real elderly, real everyone. On the other hand, we are faced with a circumstance in Canada and the United States and some other parts of the world, but I'll use this as the best and closest example, where the harvest of wild food through hunting and angling, for example, has been an integral part of the conservation paradigm in both countries. And still remains part of it. Not all of it, but it is an integral part of it with a long history and a long basis of evidence to support the statements I'm making. And so here you have this massive dichotomy between the taking of wildlife in one region of the world that can be part of the conservation ethos and machinery, and in another circumstance where the taking of wildlife for personal consumption can have devastating ecological consequences. That made me start to think more about the harvest of wildlife that we take in Canada and the United States through recreational activity. And also, we are in a time frame where people are becoming more and more concerned about the quality of their food, health issues, and so on and so forth. And so maybe there's a chance to bring this whole food movement, farm-to-table, locavore, you know, natural food harvesting movement, and link it, the coalition idea we started talking about earlier, and link it with this hunting and angler movement and so on, and bring all of that together and make people realize that the people who hunt and fish and the people who collect mushrooms and the people who may collect wild berries and fruits and the people who collect firewood and maybe even wildflowers, you know, that they are all part of a humanity that is engaging in a sustainable harvest of the bounties of nature. And so as I thought about that, I said, well, I wonder how much food do we really consume, do we really take? And the statistics show that we have somewhere between 40 and 45 million Canadians and Americans who every year hunt and fish. So it's not a sideshow. This is a massive undertaking, generates massive amounts of money for the economy and has all kinds of ancillary benefits. But a major part of the motivation and a major part of the outcome of that activity is actually the harvest of wild meat and fish and fowl. So I thought that this would probably have already been done. I mean, after all, we have really great institutions, right, in our two countries. I researched this and found that nobody had ever brought this together. There was nobody in Canada or the United States you could go to and say, well, you know, what's the poundage or kilograms of, you know, wild meat that we harvest? And then I started to think about if we could identify these wild harvests as something of importance to people, then maybe it's another way to get citizens of both of our countries to understand that wildlife habitat and wildlife not only has an aesthetic value, or if you're a hunter, maybe you have that experience in pursuit of the animal or whatever, but this is also part of our food security system, even in our two wealthy countries, that land is producing food for us, a lot of food for us. And that's another reason why we shouldn't just, sort of without deep thought, take that land out of production. So the Wild Harvest Initiative is an attempt to take all of the statistics on the harvest of fish, wildlife, and birds in Canada and the United States from all jurisdictions, bring it together, estimate the numbers, then estimate the consumable amount of food, to work with economists to give that a value, a real market value, to estimate the amount of that food that's shared and with how many people in Canada and the United States, which we are roughly estimating maybe 1 in 3 to 1 in 4 at least of our citizens in both countries. And then also to pose the question, okay, let us say tomorrow for whatever reason in our two countries, hunting and angling are, they go away. They don't happen. What is going to be the cost to society of replacing? This is a massive amount of food, an absolutely massive amount of food. It will be a significant contributor to the food of our two countries, to the food base of our two countries. What options do we have to replace it? We must take more land from wildlife to produce more of something in order to replace this. We must consume more fossil fuels. We must do a lot of things to generate that food. And at the same time, we remove from the conservation equation one of the primary funding sources and one of the primary political agitation forces for conservation in both our countries.
For people who are interested in more information, your website, conservationvisions, all one word, .com. You're doing quarterly updates. I just read the September update. Very informative. You're making a fantastic progress on this initiative. Unfortunately, our time is fleeting. Last question that I like to ask folks, though, the speakers for the Boone and Crockett Lecture Series, Shane, what are one or two take-home messages that you would like those listening to your presentation to take home?
Well, you're assuming that I already have a talk in mind. But I think the most fundamental message that will come from today's talk is the beauty of conservation, unlike many other human endeavors, is that every individual can make a contribution. And that leadership is often identified for the iconic figure, but really leadership takes place at an individual level, and there are many, many different forms of leadership. And without each individual taking, to some extent, a leadership role, the entire fabric falls apart. I think that will be probably the most important message for people to understand.
Well, Shane, I'm looking forward to your lecture a little bit later on. I've been talking with Shane Mahoney, internationally recognized conservation visionary and president and CEO of Conservation Visions. Shane, a pleasure to meet you. And again, I look forward to the presentation. Continued success with all of your important initiatives.
Well, thank you very much. Very kind of you to have me, and it's been most enjoyable.